Welcome to the Celtics Journal podcast. It's been a while, and we apologize for the hiatus, but it feels good to be back with Jeff Kidger by my side. And of course, today we also have Mike DiPrisco from NBC Sports Washington to talk about all that has unfolded in the past, I guess, month or so. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. A lot has changed with the Celtics team since the last time we talked.
This is true. Thanks for having me back, guys. This should be fun.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you guys on. The Celtics made a bunch of moves before the draft and free agency, which kind of left a lot of fans kind of questioning the front office, and you know, they wanted to see moves on those days of, like I said, free agency. But guys that are coming in, Dennis Schroeder, Al Horford, Chris Dunn, Josh Richardson, Enes Kanter, Bruno Fernando, they're all in. But then we got Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier, Tristan Thompson, and Semi Ojeleye. They're all out. Among other guys like Luke Kornet, but we're not going to really jump into those guys. What was your favorite move that the Celtics made, Jeff?
In terms of somebody who has left or has joined, because the re-signing of Marcus Smart has been fantastic, but if it's for somebody who's come in, probably Al Horford.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite, Al Horford coming back, because we kind of called that one a few pods ago. But like you said, that Marcus Smart signing, it's A1.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that are going to be mad about that, I think, but I don't understand the Celtics fans that hate on him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, so for fans that don't know, he signed a four-year extension worth $77 million, and that's just a bargain, in my opinion. But I've been on Team Smart since day one. So what do you think, Mike, from a Wizards perspective?
I mean, I think it's a win-win type of deal for both sides. I mean, Smart, he gets paid, secures his money, and raises for another 4 years. And the Celtics kind of solidify their core moving forward while keeping the flexibility to move one of them, probably Smart, if they need to. From my point of view, I hope that doesn't happen, because Marcus Smart and Celtics Green seems to be just the right picture to see. But yeah, I think he just does so many things that good teams need. My thought with him has always been, you know, there's no way a championship level team doesn't need a guy like that. And the Celtics have had him the longest. He's been synonymous with their 7-year playoff run right here, the streak. So, yeah, I don't understand when Celtics fans, especially Celtics fans, you should know firsthand how great he is. Other fans of other teams, I get why you don't like Marcus Smart, as how he plays. But this guy does everything that nobody else wants to do. He has never done it any differently. He's never changed his style of play. And I'm glad that he keeps getting paid to play that way, because there's fewer and fewer guys like him. And the fact that I think it just speaks to how special Smart has been to that fan base, where given all his warts, nobody ever wants to trade that guy.
Yeah, I think it always comes down to, like, you never know what you have until it's gone. And I think a lot of the Marcus Smart haters they would be sick to their stomach when, you know, Marcus gets traded to the Wizards or, you know, elsewhere. And, like, they realize the Marcus Smart size hole that's on this team. They're not on this team anymore. I think this move, if it wasn't to, you know, maintain flexibility and everything, I think this was to call out those haters and say, Marcus Smart is our starting point guard. Like, he's a great passer, and I know everybody wants to, you know, get on him for his 3-point shooting and, you know, whenever he takes a bad shot. But those shots are going to be a lot less when he's running the point and he's in a completely different role. And it also seems like for the past, like, 7 or 8 years, we've been going down this list of point guards, like, oh, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, maybe Kemba Walker will work. Well, no, like, Marcus Smart has been here the entire time, and he could have been in this role for years. So I'm really excited to finally see it. But then it's also, when we signed Dennis Schroeder, I was kind of like, oh no, like, are we doing this again? So my question to you guys is, what do you think Dennis Schroeder's impact is going to be with the team, and is it kind of going to be a positive or negative effect on Marcus Smart? Start with you, Mike.
I think the Schroeder signing was more of a reaction to the market than it was Schroeder's exact fit with this team, because once free agency kind of played out and Schroeder was still out there waiting for a deal, the Celtics kind of swooped in and offered him that taxpayer mid-level exception 1-year deal. That's how I would compare this to just an NBA one and done. Schroeder's going to come in. I think he's going to come off the bench. I think that's the best role for him historically. We saw last year he struggled in that starting role with the Lakers. We saw the Hawks kind of become done with him as their starting point guard and trade him to the Thunder for basically nothing. Once he got to OKC and came off the bench, you started to see why, you know, the Hawks paid him in the first place. So I think the Celtics will bring him off the bench, not really impacting Smart's role at all, and just kind of get as much out of him as they can before he leaves in free agency for, you know, a bigger contract.
Yeah, I don't think this impacts Smart at all. There's no scenario where he comes in and starts over Marcus. So he does fill a need for the Celtics, because they've had over the last couple of years, their bench unit, it's filled with guys that aren't really NBA players. The very least, Schroeder is. So, and he needs to reestablish his value too. So sending him with the second unit where he thrives and he can kind of do his own thing is the best spot for him. And I think with this extension, the Celtics have kind of reinforced that idea that Smart's their guy, Schroeder's just here until they need to get rid of him. And the Celtics right now are about $6 million over the cap. I mean, you do like a couple things, including getting rid of Schroeder at the deadline, and then they're right back under it. So there's a good chance that they don't even have him for a full season.
Yeah, so I'm kind of caught in the middle with Dennis Schroeder, because I don't know if it's going to be where, you know, he's playing with a chip on his shoulder and he really wants to get that payday, so he's, you know, overexerting himself on offense and he's really kind of he's taking away from the Jays and Smart, and I don't want that to happen, obviously, but I also kind of think he's going to come in and be that sixth man and we're going to be really surprised, and we're going to have that conversation later where it's like, should we re-sign him? The answer is no, but I think we're going to get into that conversation later, especially with kind of just like a question mark at the shooting guard position. And kind of leads me into my next question for you guys, because whenever I'm going over like the rotations for this next upcoming season, I can't nail down a starting two guard, because right now my starting lineup is Marcus Smart, question mark at two, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and then Robert Williams is going to be my primary starter, but it's really interchangeable with Al Horford. What do you guys think?
I think that, I mean, in terms of the big, I want to see Rob. I think he's earned that and he's going to be great. But just as from a fan perspective, I want to see Richardson start, because I want to see the defense. Even though,
is that too much defense though?
I mean, after last season, I don't think there's any such thing, especially.
Of course.
But Richardson does do well handling the ball, and like we've just talked about, we want Smart. So I think there's room to play with that lineup, but I do want to see the defensive lineup.
I think that would be a death lineup.
Mm-hmm. And I want to see that so
bad. Rich.
Yeah.
Brown and Tatum are great defenders too. Like, you can't knock those guys. I'm also kind of curious about Al Horford's health. I've heard a lot of things about him not being able to play back-to-backs, and we've been through that before. And I don't want to go through that again, where we're kind of, you know, oh yeah, well, he'll be healthy for the playoffs, but then the playoffs come around and he gets injured anyway.
I think that.
So I don't want to do that again.
I think this is a different case. If you're referencing Kemba, I mean, he played like he was 20, and he will always play like he's 20. Al Horford, on the other hand, it's complete opposite, where he'll always play like an old man. So like, hopefully that adds some durability to him. So
And you got to think, last year he got shut down halfway through. He's been
well rested,
resting for a long time. He's going to be fresh. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see him space the floor for the Celtics, because I've always wanted Rob to get out there and start shooting threes, but that's just not his game. He's really just a rim runner, and I think that's where he's most effective.
I think he can stretch out to being like a jump shooter. He's shown that a little bit.
Like 15 feet?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So where do you guys think the Celtics stack up against the rest of the Eastern Conference? Because other teams have made a lot of moves. Like, Chicago's gotten a lot better. Charlotte's made some moves. You know, Wizards are now up there with, you know, the fringe play-in teams. So I'd like to get you guys' opinion on that one.
I think there's a clear-cut tier up top with Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Miami after getting Kyle Lowry. And then I would put the Celtics in a tier below that with the Sixers and the Hawks, probably. With you know, the potential to move up, given how well Smart does at starting point guard, how well Richardson shoots the ball as the starting two guard, and whether the Jays can take another leap. So I would put them in there, and clearly above teams like Chicago, Indy, New York, Washington, Charlotte, all those other ones. I think those would, like, the top six would be, in my mind, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, Boston, Philly, and Atlanta.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are clearly behind those top three, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami. And for the fourth seed, I think it's the Sixers to lose, even though there's a pretty good chance that they do lose it. I don't really – there's a lot of unknown with them. But I
would still place them above the Celtics. I think a team to watch is Indy. They're a good team. And with McMillan, they were in that mix too. They just had a down year. If they're healthy and Carlisle can come in and kind of, you know, set everything straight, then they could launch themselves into the conversation with the Celtics and ahead of where I think the Knicks will be. But I would expect the Celtics to be in that 5-6.
So you guys don't expect the Celtics to be in the play-in tournament again?
No. Absolutely not.
I'd be surprised. I mean, they were the 7 seed. They were the top play-in team in a hellish year filled with injuries and all that stuff. So their floor is too high for play-in.
Yeah, like, we wouldn't have been in the play-in tournament had we not lost to the Thunder and the Bulls and, like, a couple other teams, like, late in the season, where, like, that really affected our positioning. You know, we were jockeying for position with the Heat and, I think, Hawks and Knicks. And I just don't see that happening again. I think those teams, like you guys kind of said, are just, like, they over-exceeded their expectations last year because of everybody else being injured or, you know, whatever happened with the Sixers, like, later on in the season.
Yeah, I think even with all their additions, I'd be surprised to see the Knicks in a top 5 seed again. It's just that they won on effort, defense. They were healthy pretty much the entire year, if I'm not mistaken. And they added Kemba, who's known to be injury prone and bad at defense. Fournier availability with the Celtics wasn't great, bad, you know, not a great defender. So I don't see it. Knicks fans are going to be excited and decently insufferable until the reality sets in, but that's okay.
I don't think winning with effort is unsustainable. I just think that their best players are fundamentally flawed. Like, I don't like Julius Randle or Evan Fournier, who they added. I just don't think... I think they overpaid for these guys. And Kemba Walker will inevitably get hurt. Like you said, I've been low on the Knicks forever. I don't think they did anything this offseason to change that.
Yeah, I mean, they all see... Like, all their bet... Like, Randall, Fournier, Kemba, they all seem... And maybe even RJ Barrett. They all seem like they're in a role... Like, one step up from where they should be.
Yeah.
Like, if Randall's your number one, he should probably be your two... three. Fournier should not be your second scoring option, as we learned last year.
Yeah, no, he's advertised as something he's not. Everyone keeps telling me he has a skill set that he simply doesn't, as anything more than a shooter. So I think they're gonna underperform relative to what their expectation is.
Yeah, I think, and we always talk about this like almost every year, I feel like, with addition by subtraction. And every, like I said earlier, every time, you know, we got rid of IT, we replaced him with Kyrie, and then we're like, okay, well, you know, it's less, you know, spark, but it's more, you know, it's more positional basketball where we actually have a real point guard now. And then we moved on to Kemba. I think we're going to be a lot better than we were last year because of this. Because we've now gotten our roles together. We now have Smart starting. We have Brown and Tatum as 1A, 1B. And we're not in that position anymore where we're kind of... I think last year was more of a bridge year than this year. And I don't even like the term bridge year because it kind of makes us seem that we have something coming. And we've been doing this every year where... we always have something coming. Oh, it's next year, guys. Like, next year we're going for that big star. And one thing I'll say about the current, I guess, administration in Brad Stevens, like, I didn't like positioning the team to, you know, land a star like Beal or Dame, because it just kind of, it doesn't belittle Brown and Tatum, but it kind of makes them seem like we're not enough. So do you guys think that Brown and Tatum can be built around with Smart and you keep adding little pieces? Or do you think we really do need that third star and we need to move Marcus because of it?
I do think they need more. I don't know if that's necessarily another star. I think that's the trajectory that they're on. They're kind of positioning themselves to make that kind of trade if it was to become available. But... If the Jays can kind of go at the rate that they've been going, then I don't see why that wouldn't be an incredibly competitive team that could, if you just fill the rest of the roster with, like, good players, I don't see why that wouldn't be a top of the East kind of team. But the course of action that I'd like them to take is to get another star, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think the third star is needed because, like we kind of see every year, injuries happen. The injury bug always comes around. And I think what Brad Stevens is trying to do is trying to get close enough to where when a Brooklyn star goes down, when an LA star goes down, like the Celtics are almost next up to where they can be that Phoenix Suns or the Milwaukee Bucks where they just kind of, you know, they stand the test of time and they make it that far because just luck of the draw with health. But my question to you guys is, are the C's underrated or overrated based off of, you know, I guess preseason expectations now?
I mean, we'll see. I think right now they're underrated. It's hard to gauge what everybody thinks about them, but it just seems that the general consensus is that they're, you know, a fringe, like, non-play-in team, if that makes sense. Like, maybe they'll be in the play-in, maybe they won't. I think out of it.
Yeah. It seems like the majority are kind of thinking that this is a bridge year or a gap year or whatever you want to call it, where, like, the Celtics are, they're not a contending team and they're not going to make any noise. And I think that's perfect for us. I think that's where we need to be because it kind of brings us back to those early Brad Stevens days with, you know, 2013-2014 was, you know, an anomaly where we didn't make the playoffs. But after that, it was kind of just like, you know, we're bottom of the barrel in the playoff contention, but we overexceeded expectations, and then we were the one seed or the two seed or whatever it was. But those teams were always a lot of fun to watch because the expectation was low. And I think that's what
we're going to see this year. Well, yeah, I mean, think about the last, what was it, 4 years? Every year mm-hmm. that there was little to no expectation, the team went to the conference finals. Mm-hmm. And every year that there was expectation, they crashed and burned. So this is the sweet spot for the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown era. We'll see if they can kind of win this year and next year too. I think just the way they're built, they'll, like, with the defensive lineup you guys were talking about earlier, and just having Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum on their team, there's a lot of regular season wins in that kind of, you know, nucleus. So they I wouldn't be surprised. Like, they're not on a on the tier with Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, but I wouldn't be surprised if they finished above one of those teams in the standings, just out of, I don't know, regular season juice. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think they could definitely reach that level at towards the end of the season, like you said. But there's still so many questions about the team. Like, Dennis Schroeder, who knows what he's going to be? You know, the Celtics' youth, Romeo, like, we don't know what his health is going to be, because it seems like he's been, like, you know, broken glass ever since he stepped onto the court. And then Grant Williams, what is year three Grant going to look like? What is, you know, Aaron Nesmith in his sophomore year, Peyton Pritchard? You know, we have a bunch of guys that are kind of just like a, who knows how they're going to fit with this team, but they all kind of have their role now. But then, like, last season, it was a letdown in a lot of people's eyes. So it's just, it's a lot of questions on how this team is really going to perform.
Yeah, I think the expectations for last year were misplaced. I think that's really what we can get out of this, is that team had a lot of expectations behind them, and they just weren't very good. This year, I think it's kind of corrected itself to the point where they have a solid team, and while the expectations aren't as high as they were at the beginning of last season, this team has a real possibility to be better than last year, even though we're in a bridge year, if we want to call it that. The only thing up in the air right now is Brad said it himself. He needs one or two guys to step up, or one of the younger guys to step up. And from what we've seen in Summer League, it looks like it's going to be one of, if not both, of Pritchard and Nesmith. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you guys, who do you think is going to step up from that Celtics youth? And I guess from what we saw, Pritchard could do that, but I think when he got shut down by Davion Mitchell in the championship game, I think it kind of set us back to where we're like, okay, like, he scored 92 or 93, like, that's cool, but you still got to be able to get past, I'm not taking away from Davion Mitchell, but, like, Summer League guards, like, in the Summer League, you got to be able to score a little bit more than 6 points in the championship game when you're trying to, you know, excel on a team like the Boston Celtics. So I like Aaron Nesmith, actually, for the most improved Celtics youth player. I think he could actually start, and I think he would fit in pretty well if he can become that steady shooter like we saw in the second Summer League game when he was, like, 7-for-8 from three.
Yeah, if Nesmith can start this year, that's a major win. I don't think I wouldn't expect him to, just because it's hard to make that leap from, you know, fringe rotation player to starter on a playoff team like that, but he's a shooter, he's a wing defender, that's exactly what you want in that spot. And after letting Fournier walk, the Celtics are in desperate need of more shooting. I think that's the one thing on this roster that we're gonna continue to talk about throughout the season, like, they need more shooting, they need more shooting. And Fournier's absence, I feel like, will be felt there. But yeah, if Nesmith can kind of step up and hit, you know, high 30% from three on, you know, decent volume, not a ton, then I think it'll be a very valuable development. And that's the kind of thing that raises your ceiling if you can get a guy like Nesmith to figure it out.
I think the thing about Fournier's role last year, that probably could have been replaced by anybody on that team if, you know, like we just said, Nesmith becomes a better shooter. Like, he could have put up a 30-point game like Fournier did and then come back with a goose egg and then come back with another 18-point performance the next game. Like, Nesmith could do that for us this season. So I don't necessarily think the loss of Fournier is going to be felt as much as we initially thought. Because I was originally on the re-sign Evan Fournier at all costs team, because I thought that he was our best chance at staying competitive and having a, you know, a third option that is, you know, able to score.
Yeah, I actually didn't like the idea of re-signing Evan Fournier just because, like I said before, we were going to be paying like $20 million a year for a guy who I was told is a secondary playmaker and can dribble a little bit and cut to the basket. When the guy that I saw was really just someone who could hit spot up threes and was streaky doing so. So I'm not a huge fan of overpaying for a guy just based on what the narrative is, especially if that means sending your team deep into the tax for a guy that doesn't really do it much for you. So I think this version of the Celtics is better, especially if Nesmith can be good and take that role on his own. As much as I want to see the Richardson starting lineup for defensive purposes, the best version of the Celtics has Nesmith, in my opinion.
So is it worth going deep into the tax to fill a need? Because, like, I think you would agree that shooting is the need.
Going into the tax, Jeff?
I'm not here to say that we should be so conscious about ownership. It's just as ownership obviously has the decision, the final say. And even if I agree with it or not, I have to kind of make my opinions and based on what I think they'll do. And if I was an owner, I wouldn't go into the tax for that kind of player. And like, what have the Celtics done recently to prove that they deserve that? They were a 7 seed in the play-in tournament where all the other teams in the tax are top 3 in each conference. So there's going to be like the Jazz, the Clippers, Brooklyn, and then like randomly you'll see the Celtics 7 seed deep into the tax for Evan Fournier. That doesn't make any sense. I'd rather.
Yeah, but I feel like you may be overreacting to what happened last season. Whereas if you look at the team that made it to the conference finals and lost to Miami in 6 games because, well, they didn't have enough shooting after Hayward got hurt, you add Fournier to that mix, you get some health. Obviously, the Kemba thing was a problem.
Well, yeah.
Replace Kemba with Horford and then have Smart as the starting point guard, add some more shooting there. I mean, I don't think that's a definite title team. With like this team plus Fournier, I don't think it's a definite title team. I just don't really love the excuse not to bring a guy like that back. Like, I get the contract, but still.
No,
move that guy.
I get that they needed shooting in that Miami series, but that wasn't the reason they lost. The reason they lost was because Kemba wasn't healthy. That was the same deal against Toronto and how they almost lost that series because he wasn't healthy. He wasn't healthy, and Toronto still focused him. So adding Fournier, a guy who wasn't the reason why they lost a series, and pretending like it is, just wasn't the move. Now you are hovering right above the tax, and you can easily get yourself under it, and you have financial flexibility to take advantage of an opportunity to put yourself into that top tier in the East. I feel like this was the clear move.
Does this current Celtics team beat that Eastern Conference Finals Heat team that we lost to?
This one right now, or the one with Evan Fournier in that hypothetical?
This one right now, the current team that we'll have.
I mean, if they were to play right now, probably. I would say so, just because that's more of a statement on how I feel the Heat were overperforming.
Yeah, so like,
yeah, and the Celtics have a lot more answers for a guy like Bam now than they did. Tice just was overwhelmed.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say, where we're kind of in that position where, like, we could be one of the finals teams because of that. Like, we have that finals team makeup where we have some center, like, we have bigs, we have wings, we have our guards. I think we have enough where, like I said earlier, if someone gets hurt, you can be the bubble Heat where you kind of slide in and you catch fire in the playoffs because you get the semi-injured Bucks and then you actually get, an injured Celtics with missing Gordon Hayward. Like, it's very possible, and I think we have the makeup, and I think that's what Brad Stevens is trying to create, just a good, solid, well-rounded team that can come in and just catch fire.
Yeah, I just don't think that the end of your plan, or you should really, like, trap yourself in a spot where the peak of that plan is to just have a puncher's chance in the Eastern Conference Finals. So I think you have to have more vision than that, which is why I like the avenue that they chose, where they have the flexibility to sign someone if they need to. But most likely will be a trade. They position themselves for a trade to get a guy that launches you into that conversation legitimately instead of
cornering yourself. If Fournier's like $19 million figure is on the payroll.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't impact your, like, that doesn't hinder you from making a trade. It just makes the luxury tax payment higher.
Yeah, you can still make the trade, but right now they could still create cap space, I believe, to sign people.
Yeah, they think that they were.
And then even if they can't, then they wouldn't have this trade player exception, where the goal now is to still have those contracts that you can trade out for a star like Bradley Beal, and then after the fact fill out your roster with trade player exceptions. Where if you kept Fournier and wanted to trade him that way, you'd go into the tax and not have that traded player exception.
But would it have been better to re-sign Evan Fournier, wait on the Marcus Smart extension, trade Fournier for that big star, and then we try to, you know, work something out with Smart? Because I feel like that would have led to Smart leaving.
I like the peace of mind of having Marcus Smart back more than taking that risk with Evan Fournier, who I don't really like anyway.
Yeah, so like I kind of said, I really do like the position that the Celtics are in, because if this truly is a bridge year, I think having a puncher's chance in a bridge year is much better than, you know, the latter, and having, you know, Evan Fournier being the third option on a team where he just doesn't belong.
Yeah, you can look at it as, some people have chosen to look at it as wasting the 1 year of the Jays, but I like to think of it as you have these two budding stars and you have flexibility to do something with that, and that's a really good position to be in.
Yeah, I think you're developing your young core of Brown and Tatum, but then you're also, you know, developing Smart's passing ability and his ability to be a point guard, a starting point guard in this league.
I want to see how much they use Jason Tatum as a ball handler, or they're really going to commit to Marcus Smart. So,
do you think that they're going to be running more plays for Brown and Tatum to kind of play off each other this season, or do you think it's kind of going to be what it's been, with a lot of ISO and ball movement for
things? I hope they have a little bit more of a two-man game going on at times, because before it just had always looked like it was your turn, my turn. So I'd hate to see that continue. But I hope they have a two-man game, or Smart can link those two together better than they have in the past.
Yeah, so I guess we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap up the show today with our final thoughts, and I want to expand this to the entire NBA. What's your League Pass champion this year? Who's gonna come and steal the show on League Pass?
Like just it's the best team to watch.
Who's gonna be the most fun team to watch? That's not, you know, the Nets, the Lakers. Because my team, I think I might be picking the Bulls, but I'm also kind of in between them and the Hornets, just because that's like Lob City.
Yeah, the Hornets kind of came to mind. But I could go with... I could also go with the Pistons. Killian Hayes is healthy. Cade Cunningham added to the mix. Jeremy Grant. Sadiq Bey. It's a solid squad. It'll be a decent... I mean, no one's carving out space in their night to watch the Pistons typically, but I feel like they're going to be better than people expect them to.
That'd be a lot of fun to watch, actually. I didn't even think of them off the bat.
Yeah, the Pistons are a good one. I want to see how Killian Hayes does after his injury. I want to see how he develops. I was high on him coming out of the draft. So, yeah, they're going to be a good team, but I think
what about Kelly Olynyk?
Oh, Kelly.
Not excited to see him?
No, I'm not excited to see Kelly Olynyk.
Kelly
No, I'm going to go with one of the guys that are one of the teams that you already mentioned. I'm going with the Hornets. That's going to be fun. I don't know how they're going to be. Gordon Hayward's still like a question mark, but even if he's not available, like he probably won't be, I still want to see that team. I think they're going to be fun.
Yeah, I don't really think that the Hornets have enough punch. They don't have the right guys in order to win, you know, deep in the playoffs, but I do think they're going to be an exciting team to watch. I think be like the Hawks without the overachieving going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
With the Bulls, though, like you mentioned, I do think that they're, the skill sets that they have on that team are just like a complete contradiction in some ways, so they'll be fun too.
It'll be interesting to watch with Lonzo, Levine, but also Alex Caruso, and then DeMar DeRozan, so it'll be interesting. But that's where we're going to wrap it up today. We have a Marcus Smart hype video out. It's going to be a lot of fun watching him this season, the starting point guard role. Thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, repost our stuff. We love all of the interactions from you guys. We appreciate everything. Thanks, Mike, for joining the show. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks. All right. See you guys later.